Welcome to episode 493 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther. And now that we have our episode number right, this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Every once in a while, we forget how many episodes we've recorded.
Yes, that whole thing, despite the fact that I say it every week, is in the show notes. I kind of feel ashamed for admitting that I read that every week, but I would mess it up if I didn't.
Well, and in fact, sometimes we forget to update it, but the second take is what you hear, so it was seamless until I brought it up.
Right.
Now, last week, we had a lot of news to go through because we had missed a couple of, well, a week, I guess, and a couple of big stories. This week, we want to catch up on some of the feedback that we missed, and we have some new feedback with which I will start us out with, Josh, but I am going to summarize this first feedback item because when I read through this, I was kind of fascinated by this. So our first item is from Gary, and Gary is from Australia. And he was talking about how with Ultraviolet shutting down, he was going to have to rely on Flixster now for his content. And I'm thinking, wait, what? Flixster doesn't support Ultraviolet anymore. And that's true in the US, but it's not true, apparently, in Australia. In Australia, you have Flixster as apparently now the only remaining vendor that supports content that was purchased on Ultraviolet. So kind of like in the US, you had to pair it with whatever remaining vendors existed, which for all intents and purposes was the folks at Vudu and then Fantango Now, Fantango Go, whatever the Fantango thing is.
Fandango Now.
Fandango Now. But in Australia, their partner is, in fact, still Flixster. So that's cool. Except, yeah, Flixster's shutting down there, too. So they're now trying to figure out, okay, well now what? Well, apparently, Flixster has notified their users that Google is going to take on the content that you purchased from Ultraviolet. So anything that you have in your Flixster library is apparently going to move to Google. And that was scheduled to happen in July, but that didn't happen in July. So Flixster sent out a note to people to let them know, okay, no, we're still planning this. Google Play is going to be the source for your Ultraviolet content, but it's not ready yet. But we're still planning on doing it before we shut down at the end of the year. So all of that was just kind of fascinating to me because, Josh, I feel bad. You and I are really kind of insulated from and therefore ignorant to all of the stuff that's happening outside of the U.S. with a lot of these services, unless our listeners make us aware of it.
Yeah, it's not like we're going out and looking for Ultraviolet news going on in other countries. It's enough to keep up with what's going on here. But this is kind of nuts. Like, yeah, I didn't realize that it was Flixster is the main source. And now Google is going to be. And what the heck does that mean for iTunes? And if we only had movies anywhere, truly anywhere. You're welcome, Jason, Database Jason. there's your call out this episode. If Movies Anywhere truly was anywhere, then this wouldn't be an issue in Australia either.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. And it's something that I hope we end up seeing Disney finally expand to other countries. I don't understand why this hasn't been expanded beyond its initial rollout, really. I mean, in the US even, we're still missing some studios. We're still missing Lionsgate and Paramount. And then certainly the geographical distribution and availability of Movies Anywhere is very limited. So hopefully we will see that expand. Now, you mentioned iTunes. As kind of an aside, Gary was also talking about iTunes and his also trying to figure out, okay, well, what am I supposed to do with my iTunes library? And in particular, I think he's probably I don't know, but I think he's probably talking about audio, because iTunes content that you buy in video isn't inherently transferable to any other service, except through Movies Anywhere. So he had mentioned that he used to use an iTunes server on his NAS. That software doesn't exist anymore. And after having to give up on using Media Center for music and switching to iTunes, he finally was happy with it. But now there aren't any third-party services that seem to support it anymore. So what's he going to do? He mentions that maybe JRiver is a possibility for stuff like that. But it is a crazy time as we see services that we've all come to depend on, arguably some of them spurious, then end up disappearing, and they're host to all of your content.
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, he's apparently the type of guy who likes messing with this stuff. So at least it gives him something to do.
There you go. It gives you something to do, Gary. All right. Well, you have the message that we promised we would read from Dan.
Yeah. And it was targeted at me specifically, although this is a lot of really great stuff for our entire audience. So Dan says, this is feedback for Josh on the Hulu discussion from last week's podcast, which is really a couple of weeks ago now. He said, I overheard a comment on Bloomberg made by an entertainment business analyst last year that stuck with me. It must have really stuck with him. He heard this last year. The thing that the guy said was, advertising is a tax on the poor. The gist was that time is our most valuable resource. And if you can afford to buy your shows on iTunes or pay for commercial free on Hulu, you're buying your own time. Not everyone can choose to do so, but you either pay with your time or money. Add up the time your family spends watching Hulu commercials in a month and decide whether you'd like the time or money and choose accordingly. I think we should maybe just take a second to stop, because he really has a few different things in this message. So let's hit on that real quick. Like, he's absolutely right. When it comes to these ad-supported services, they are ad-supported so that you don't have to pay for them. That's how so many of the services that we use nowadays works. That's why Gmail is free. It's why... So, like, basically everything that Google does is free. YouTube, you know, so many of these things are free because of ads, and because it's not even, especially when you start to look at things like what Google is doing with ads, it's not even just that they're making money because you happen to be watching the ads and you might buy their product, but you become the product with a lot of these businesses, because they're learning about you by what ads you're watching. So there is a huge downside to these ad-sponsored business models. Now, he asked me specifically, and I think this is a valid question for everyone listening, think about how many commercials your family is watching in a month on Hulu. And this is a great question for me, because I do have the ad-supported version. And right now, it's not a ton. I watched all of Veronica Mars, but that's about all I've watched on Hulu so far. So that's only, I think it was 9 episodes or something like that. And one of my kids has been watching some shows, but so far it's not been a lot. And so far I'm still kind of okay with the much less expensive ad-supported version of Hulu. But it is a great question that everyone should be asking themselves, not just for Hulu and not even just for streaming video, for lots of services that we use every single day.
I think that you have to be careful about this analogy. It's an interesting analogy, but at the same time, you might argue that it's recreation time. It's not like you're taking time out of something else that you're doing. You're plopping down and in front of the TV or your device or whatever to watch content. And the de facto standard has been that content comes with ads. That's how it's always worked. So it's really only been more recently that you could kind of buy your way out of those ads. So I have a hard time thinking of it as a tax. Look at it the other way. You know, I've talked about how I play Candy Crush. And Candy Crush is like, they just throw ads at you at every turn as a way of getting an extra, I don't even know what you call them, but a thing that you can use to help you in the game, or maybe an extra life or something like that. You could buy those. That's how the game works. You just buy those things normally, unless you don't want to pay for it, and then you earn them over time, or you earn more by watching ads. I think this is just a pretty typical revenue model. Tax is such a nasty word there. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I think he could, and this is taking it a little bit to the extremes, but he could make the argument that it is taking away your time that you could be using for other things, whether that's more entertainment / relaxation or something a little bit more productive. You know,
right.
If the show that you were watching, your hour-long show, was really 44 minutes instead of 60, you know, that's 16 minutes,
yeah,
or however, roughly how long, how many ads you get in an hour-long show. 16 minutes is considerable time that you could either spend watching part of another show or something else more productive.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. It's time value of money. It, you know,
yep,
it's the reason that I send my shirts to get ironed, because it'll take me too long and it's not worth my time.
Right. Exactly. All right. Well, we'll keep going on with the rest of his message here. He says, next, watch what your oldest daughter's watching habits are to understand the future of TV. My 9-year-old daughter will wait to watch shows the next day on Hulu rather than our DVR, because Hulu without commercials is easier than fast forwarding commercials.
That's so true.
Maybe it's lazy, but she also didn't grow up in the area of live TV like we did. My 7-year-old son prefers Netflix content to Hulu, but also doesn't do live TV besides sports or the occasional primetime shows that we watch as a family, because mom and dad and our antiquated habits put it on and insist. When we had a trial of unlimited DVR through YouTube TV, my kids barely used it, so I canceled. They watch Disney shows on the Disney app because the commercials are short there, and they didn't have to pick up the remote and go too far when they're fast-forwarding through commercials and then have to rewind again. This improves even more when the paid Disney service comes in October. As a parent, no commercials gives me more control over what my children see. I've always had my Windows Media Center or other DVR solutions set up to skip most commercials, so they just haven't been exposed much, and I find comfort in that. I still prefer to DVR what I can personally because it gives me control of the media, and it won't time out if Hulu or Netflix lose their rights. And that's a really, really great point there.
Yep, absolutely. And it's why I still record things that I ultimately end up watching on Hulu if I'm in that window. But I just go and delete it if I've watched it, because I know that, okay, I don't need it now, but it's there just in case.
Yep. Yeah. And frankly, my kids are pretty much the same. They're watching most of their stuff on, you know, YouTube or Hulu. They're not dealing with the DVR. You know, we've got the TiVo. It's a great DVR, and it can record some of their favorite shows, like American Ninja Warrior. Holy cow, that show is like bananas in my house. But they'd rather watch on YouTube or Hulu. So I get you. Although, frankly, I'm getting to the same point. Like, I really like having Hulu and Plex and just not having to deal with commercials. But Plex isn't a fair comparison, because Plex means I've already purchased it and ripped it or whatever. So it's not a great comparison, I suppose. But anyway, thank you so much to Dan and also to Gary for the messages this week. Really, really great thoughts on what's going on down in Australia and what's going on across the industry with these ad-supported business models. All right, so let's move on to our main news for the week. And as usual, we're going to start with some video news. And it used to be a lot more common than lately, but it used to be that it seemed every week we had a Plex story. There haven't been as many, but this week we're starting with a Plex story.
We are. And it's one that we've talked about in the past. It's just kind of here officially now. So we have talked in the past about the revised user experience that they are rolling out. And it's been in beta, I believe, on the Apple TV and the Roku platforms. I don't know what other platforms had it, but those are the ones that I think they talked about most in the past. And I have been using it on the Apple TV platform for a good while now. And I've talked about it before. It improves many things. It makes navigation much, much easier. It is, I think, a much better overall, easier to discover and understand experience. My biggest problem with it is that it hides, and hides is the wrong word. I want to use the word obfuscate, but unless you're a techie, you might not really know what that means. Unless you're a developer, you might not know what that means.
Right.
It kind of intentionally, or maybe not intentionally, I don't know, ends up taking the ability to move between different people's accounts and libraries, which was crazy easy in the last version, and makes it much harder to do by burying it in the settings for your primary navigation. So it's not even like you can just go, oh, okay, I'm going to go to my navigation and then select the user and switch to a different user. Nope. That's how like the long ago version worked. And then it's not like I'll go to my movies library and pivot between my movies and Josh's movies and Chris's movie. Nope. That's how the last version worked. For this, you have to go all the way through your menu and then add a new menu item, or basically manually go and find the library that you now want to see beyond those that are in your primary navigation. And I kind of hate that. I just don't think it makes any sense.
Yeah, like if you don't do any work to customize this and you're someone who's using multiple servers, it's not very friendly. It took me a while to be able to find the other servers that I have access to. A long time.
I'm not surprised by that at all. And I think the other thing is that even if you do customize it, you don't want your primary navigation to have all the different libraries of all the different people that you connect with, because then it's just a junk drawer. Right? Then it ends up being like the hamburger menu in every app that has too many options in it. So I really don't like the way they've implemented library selection here across users. Otherwise, I think it is a much easier to navigate, much simpler, much more straightforward, easier to filter, easier to browse versus to search. So they've made a lot of good improvements here. Don't let my dislike of their user, like your friends' libraries and the way they've handled those, dissuade you from trying or liking this just as a general overall improvement, because I think it is a good improvement. And it is now rolling out to the TV platforms. I assume that means game consoles, but they didn't explicitly say that. And then it's also now out on the web app and the media player. So if you have the media player application, that's really just a wrapper for your desktop around the web app, that also has that available in TV mode. And then finally, they say that it's also going to be coming to Android and iOS. And that horrifies me. Because your mobile experience should not be the same as your TV experience.
No.
Hulu failed miserably in this manner, and they've been backtracking ever since.
Yeah, mobile and the TV are at opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to designing a user interface.
Yeah.
I've got a 5-inch screen and I've got a 65-inch screen. Like,
well, what Josh? You just make it smaller.
Right. Perfect. Perfect. We'll have 3 pixel icons. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, I'm very concerned about what this is going to be like on mobile platforms. So we'll have to see what they come out with. And, you know, the good thing about Plex is when they find out that their users don't like something, they respond and make changes. And that's why we have what we have now. They've done a lot to improve what we have as a TV experience. So hopefully in doing so, they don't end up totally screwing up the mobile experience.
Right. Before we move on, I have one question. Do you think that maybe one of the reasons they made it harder to get to other people's servers is because people are using it for things that aren't necessarily legal and that they wanted to dissuade that?
That seems kind of passive aggressive. I mean, arguably the whole library sharing is questionable in its legality.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, there are people that still call Plex a cesspool just for unlicensed or stolen content. And I don't know that that's fair considering how many people use Plex as a legitimate media server.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Well, our next story is something that's absolutely legitimate, but it's a way to get free HBO shows legitimately. It's not quite what it sounds like, though. So HBO has rolled out a new site called Recommended by Humans, trying to get away from all of this talk around AI and machine learning for your recommendations and all that stuff. Nope. They want to recommend you shows based on what other people, you know, in the meat space have been saying. So this is a site that just displays like tons of pictures and word blocks of recommendation, like pictures of people and then word blocks of like actual people's recommendations of various HBO shows. And when you click on one, you can either watch a trailer of the show or watch the whole first episode of the show. And it looks like it's pretty much every show. I'm sure it's probably not all of them, but it sure seems like all of them. They've got new stuff like Westworld and Game of Thrones. They've even got old stuff like The Sopranos, you know, all like everything that I've ever been interested in HBO, it's here. And you can watch the first episode for free. Now, have you played with this website yet, Richard?
I haven't. I really kind of have very little interest in this. This is just such a shameless promotional vehicle for HBO content to get you to subscribe to HBO. This is the free drugs model.
It absolutely is.
Right? I mean, here, you should try this. It's awesome. Your friend Jason likes it. Come on. Everybody else likes it. You should try it.
Your first hit of Chernobyl is free.
Yeah. 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 I'm just not excited about this. And there are other ways that you can do this. There are other ways that you can get the first episode of a series, even on HBO. I think that it's possible to do this through Apple TV app. And there are, I believe, other services that also have the ability to kind of preview the first episode of things like this. So, you know, it's a shameless promotional vehicle for them. I'm not dissing it. I'm not excited about it.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're not going to be as excited about a thing that is set up to entice people to sign up for something that you already have.
I don't have HBO right now.
Oh, but you did, and you've had it for years up until very recently. I don't have HBO, and I'm intrigued by shows like Chernobyl. That's really the one I'm the most interested in right now. And so I really like this idea, and I think I'm probably going to use it to watch the first episode of Chernobyl to find out if I like it and then if I want to sign up for a month of HBO and then turn it off. The only thing that I dislike, like I was working on our show notes on my tablet today and I'm like, oh, I should check this out. And the website is miserable on my tablet because
nice.
It's just like this giant canvas that you just scroll in any direction on and it doesn't scroll well on a tablet. It's just, it's not good. Like I'd rather them just, I don't know, any other sort of navigational interface would have been preferred, I think. But
HBO has put out a bad user experience? No, wait, really? Like, no.
Yeah. All right. So that's latest from HBO. I'll be checking it out. And the link to this, and of course, everything, it will be in our show notes. So if you want to go and check out this recommended by Human Site, we've got a link for it in the show notes. Next up, a service I've never heard of before I saw this story. It's a service called Friendly Streams, but all of the vowels are missing from friendly, unless this is a case where I don't think this is a case where Y is a vowel. Friendly Streams, this is an interesting online streaming service. It's sort of like Sling TV or YouTube TV, Hulu Live, that sort of thing, but with a much, much smaller selection of channels. And it's very much family focused. Hallmark Channel, Game Show Network, Weather, Outdoor Channel, you know, every other Hallmark apparent series or channel that they have, QVC, World Fishing. So it's like really family friendly stuff plus outdoorsman stuff. Like this feels like cord cutting for middle America. That's what this package seems like. And I'm in middle America and I'm not interested in this service, but it has an appeal. Like those channels are going to appeal to some people and the price is really going to appeal to some people. The base service is $5.99 a month or $60 for a year. And they have a couple of other tiers, but it doesn't change what channels you get. It's just features. So like if you want a DVR, it costs a little bit more. If you want unlimited DVR, it's a little bit more. So, you know, you're not looking at a $45 a month YouTube TV if these are the types of channels that you're interested in. So I think it's an interesting play. It's not one I'm going to be signing up for. Richard, I'm guessing this service doesn't really sound all that interesting to you either.
No, actually, some of these are channels that I just completely block from my lineup. Right. Because I have no interest in seeing them.
Yeah. Yeah. If I had a service with these channels, I think the Weather Channel is probably the only one I wouldn't block. I might not block Sportsman Channel.
Actually, so I don't block Game Show Network. I don't block the Weather Channel. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you and I, clearly not the target audience for Friendly Streams, but our listeners might be. So go ahead and check that out if it does sound interesting to you. Here's another one that Richard is absolutely not going to be interested in, but I was until I looked into the details. This is a service called Stadium. This is not a new service, but it's one I hadn't heard of. It's one that primarily focuses on college sports. And as we're about to head into college football season, they announced that they're going to be streaming 31 college football games for free. This is a free service. You just download the app and just watch. 31 college football games is a fair number of college football games, but it's very niche. Like if you're looking for Alabama and Michigan and Clemson and the big guys, you're not going to see them here. These are games spread across ACC, Conference USA, Mountain West, MAC, Patriot. I've never even heard of Patriot. Like, I care about college football, and I've never even heard of the Patriot League and the Southern Conference. So these are all mid-majors is the term for these divisions. Mm-hmm. So unless you went to one of those schools, this is probably not super interesting for you. I was a little bit interested because I'm a MAC guy. There is one game out of these 31 that has a MAC team, just one. So maybe if you're in the if you're a Mac person, this also isn't for you. But this is a cool service for free. I mean, getting college football for free is nothing to shake a stick at. And they do have other college sports too. And the app is in most places. It's on iOS, Android, Apple TV, Fire TV, Roku. Apparently it's on Sling TV. I keep forgetting that Sling TV also has some other integration with other types of apps, but it does. So if you're looking for, you know, lesser watched college football games, then maybe Stadium is the place for you to watch them this fall.
Interesting.
Yeah. No Penn State.
Well, right, because they're in the Big 10. I mean, 11. I mean, 12. I mean...
the Big 14. Right. Whatever the heck it is. Yeah. All right, let's move on to some audio news. Spotify. This is an interesting one. Spotify is working on a new feature that will help you more quickly like make your phone switch from listening on your phone to switching to a connected speaker in your house. So if you've got, you know, Google devices, if you've got Sonos, you know, lots of different devices work as Spotify Connect devices. And if you want to switch from listening on your phone to a Spotify Connect device, it's kind of a pain. Like, you basically have to start listening to something and then click a little button that'll bring up a list of all of your available Spotify Connect devices, which Windows PCs don't show up for some reason. I'm not sure what's up with that. And then select it, and then it'll switch. What this new feature that they're testing does is basically you say, this device in my big list of devices is my favorite. So then when you get close to that device, and I'm curious to know what that really means, it then will actually pop up a notification on your phone prompting you, do you want to switch to this device? So that it's just one click to get to that device. And that actually sounds really smart. Like, I really like that idea, depending on how it all works. Because I've got like 8 Spotify Connect devices in my house. So if it's just now you're on the Wi-Fi network, so do you want to connect to your favorite? Well, no, because my favorite would probably be the bathroom speaker, and I don't want it prompting me. But for the shower.
No questions. No questions.
It's where the shower is.
Okay, whatever.
So that I can listen to music while getting ready in the morning. Oh, man. But you know, when I first get home from work, like, I don't want it to be like, hey, you want to listen in the bathroom speaker? No, I'm not going to be up there again. And like, no, I don't. So I'm very curious to see how that aspect of this is going to work. The other thing about all of this is the thing that frustrates me the most, and I'm, well, you don't have as much experience with this because you're not a Spotify user anymore. But so Saturday mornings are the perfect example for me, because I don't shower on Saturday mornings until basically everyone is awake. So then I can listen to music at whatever volume I want. And so I might be listening to something on my phone. Then I'll go to the bathroom, want to switch it to the bathroom speaker, start listening to something while I'm in the shower. And then once I get out and I'm putting my contacts in or whatever, I oftentimes I'm like, let's listen to something else. But I'm not sure what I want to listen to. So I don't use my voice to do that. I want to use my phone. So I pick up my phone and I turn it on, and my phone, like, I don't know, it freaks out or whatever and tries to, and it takes control back from the speaker. So it starts playing on my phone, and my speaker, which is at a fairly high volume, is all of a sudden screaming at me that playback has stopped because your Spotify account is in use on another device. All I wanted to do was change the track or change the artist. So I don't think that this fixes the problem that I have most frequently with Spotify Connect, but I do like the idea.
That's such a weird problem, too. Like, how unusual is it, really, that you would want to go to your device to select new music while you're connected to a Bluetooth speaker? It is not unusual.
No, it's not unusual at all. Like, that's it's weird. Kind of the point of Spotify Connect.
Yeah, that's really weird. You know, I think this is cool if they do this right, because when we first covered that they were including all of these different speakers, Sonos and Echoes, and I think even Google Play speakers now, mm-hmm. in the Spotify Connect ecosystem, we were talking about how Spotify may be the first one to come up with the follow me music thing, right? Like to actually be able to have music follow you where you go. And even if it's only from you're in the house, now you're in the car, now you're back in the house, now you're at work, and it can make those connections pseudo automatically or prompt you to automatically select them. That's a plus. I like that.
Right. I don't know. I mean, not all of these Spotify Connect devices use Bluetooth, and Spotify Connect is not a Bluetooth thing. It's switching over control of the stream to the device. But if it was using Bluetooth to know now I'm closest to this speaker, then that could absolutely work.
Right, but it's not doing that with Sonos speakers.
So how does Sonos do something like this?
No.
To know what you're closest to?
No.
Right.
No. So that's what I'm saying. I don't know how it would work the same with all the different speakers that are in their Sonos Connect, or sorry, their Spotify Connect ecosystem right now. I'll be curious to see how they pull this off.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want it to just be, oh, you're on the Wi-Fi network. That's not good enough. It's not good enough. They need to see my list of Spotify Connect devices when I get home.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot. Okay, let's move on to our last big segment of the show, and that's our gaming segment. Just one story here, really, and that is Phil Spencer sat down for a rather lengthy interview this week with GameSpot. And
a reminder who Phil Spencer is?
Oh, I probably should. Right. He's the head of Xbox over at Microsoft. You mean not everybody knows the heads of video game companies?
Maybe not. I'm just saying. Come
on. What's wrong with you people? Phil Spencer, head of Xbox over at Microsoft. He, who reports directly to Satya Nadella, like gaming, big deal at Microsoft right now. So Phil Spencer sat down to talk about the next generation Xbox, codenamed Scarlet. And again, kind of a reminder, Scarlet is supposed to be 4 times more powerful than the Xbox One X. I don't really know exactly what metric that is, but supposedly 4 times more powerful. He said that really 2 huge areas of focus for the Scarlet are making games consistently run at high frame rates. So they will be ideally targeting 4K 60 frames per second for everything. And that is way higher than the Xbox One and even the Xbox One X does in most cases. Like the Xbox One oftentimes wasn't even 1080p 30. Like first couple of years, most games were like 960p resolution and like 30 frames per second.
Yeah.
And some were like 960 and 60 frames per second. And then most games, like modern AAA style games, even on the Xbox One X, are not 4K 60. It's not powerful enough to do that. So that's cool. Like it makes sense for them to target frame rates more, because it is, especially for fast paced games, the frame rate is more important than the graphical fidelity and the resolution. It's not as fun or as pretty to talk about, but it is more important. The other big focus is going to be load times. And we've talked about that a lot in the past, because they've been talking about how they're going to use different types of hard drive technology to make load times significantly quicker. Shorter, I guess, would be the correct descriptive word there. He also reiterated that the next generation Xbox here is going to play every game that is currently playable on the Xbox One, which includes obviously every Xbox One game, a bunch, you know, hundreds of backwards compatible Xbox 360 games, and dozens of backwards compatible original Xbox games. So it will play four generations of games natively on the hardware. So that's, again, awesome. That's really, really great. They're also, he said that this is something that's a little bit different for them. They're planning full, like, they're planning support for you to be able to use the controllers that you already have. And he worded this interestingly. He said, we're going to respect the compatibility of the controllers you already have. And that's a really weird sentence. It's a really weird sentence that I'm sure was wordsmithed like crazy. What it essentially means is, if you've got a sweet Xbox One controller, like maybe you did an awesome yellow Design Lab controller like me, or you bought one of those Xbox Elite controllers, or the one that's coming out later this year, those are still going to work on the Xbox Scarlet.
Let's be clear about this. They want you to buy as many of them as you can possibly muster. That's why they keep on coming out with new ones, right?
Right.
So imagine the uproar if they were to say, oh, your old controllers aren't going to work anymore.
Yeah, yeah. So they're going to continue to work. What he doesn't say is in what capacity. Are you going to be able to use your Xbox One controller to play Scarlet games? Or will you only be able to use your Xbox One controller to play Xbox One, Xbox 360, and original Xbox games?
Interesting.
He didn't say that. So we're not, I don't think we're going to know until next year when the official announcement comes out for the next Xbox, when we get the name and what it looks like and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But all of this sounds really good. Like I think it's become very obvious that Phil Spencer and everybody else over at Microsoft working on the Xbox, they learned their lessons from the first couple of years of the Xbox One. And this next generation, everything looks like it's going in the right direction for Microsoft. And that Sony, they're just kind of, it seems like they're kind of resting on their laurels here. And it could be one of those generational shifts where Xbox takes off and mostly wins again. And I say mostly because I still don't see Xbox winning in Japan. It's definitely not going to win in Japan. It probably never will. But it could be a generation where they absolutely win in the US and do far better against Sony in Europe and other parts of the world. So it's got me excited. A little over a year away until this thing comes out. I'm getting excited.
Cool.
All right. If you're not listening live, which you're almost definitely not, then you do have a couple of new games with gold to pick up now on your Xbox. For the second half of the month, you get Castlevania Lords of Shadow. That's your 360 backwards compatible game. And for your Xbox One game that's available from August 16th to September 15th, that's Forza Motorsport 6. That's two versions old, but it's still a free top-tier racing game. So there you go. All right, that's it for our gaming news. That's really it for all of our news. This is the point of the show where I like to recommend that if you like the show, share it with a friend in whatever way works for you. You know, screenshot how you're listening to it on Twitter, share it on Facebook, go to work and tell everybody that you work with that they need to listen to this. If you're a boss, tell them they should listen to Entertainment 2.0 or they're fired. You should absolutely do that. That seems like a really, really great way.
I don't know that that's a good thing to do. I don't know about that.
I'm a recent manager. I think I'm going to try that sort of approach.
Yeah, I don't know that I would recommend that, honestly.
Okay, so I'll stop giving terrible business advice and instead we'll move on to what's going on in our entertainment centers.
All right. Well, I decided that we didn't have enough media services in our lives. So I signed up for a couple more. Well, that's not entirely true. I signed up for one. Edward signed up for the other. So I think I mentioned in the past that we got a vehicle that has CarPlay in it. And CarPlay works really nicely with the Amazon Music service that I have. The problem is, you can't use voice commands to control any of your music and access your music using CarPlay through Amazon Music. You have to have Apple Music to use voice commands with your iPhone and CarPlay. So
that's ridiculous, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
That's
but it's
absolutely
how it
ridiculous.
Yep. So Edward's been asking me, okay, how do I get access to our music? How do I get access to our music? How can I pull it up in the car? And the easiest way is just to get the Apple Music service. And I've been resisting because we already have the Amazon service. So I said, why don't you sign up for Apple Music? Oh, and by the way, get the family plan and then I can try it too. And if I like it enough, then maybe we'll give up the Amazon Music and we'll just stick with Apple Music. And by the time, you know, with a family plan for two of us, it's roughly going to cost the same amount as it would just for each of us having our own respective music services anyway. So because, you know, that Amazon service is really deeply discounted if you have Prime. So we're going to give this a try. And I already switched our Echo devices and our Sonos system to favor Apple Music in any requests that you make for music. So we'll see how this goes. And I think we have 3 months to test it out. Then I also signed up for a video service called Canopy. I never heard of this, but good old Dave Zatz, who was actually trolling us a little bit tonight, was posting about the Canopy service being available through his public library. Oh, well, that's interesting. What is this thing? So Canopy, it turns out, has all kinds of independent films and TV series and instructional videos and a lot of the Criterion Collection, which in itself is a $10 subscription fee if you're interested in those movies. And so I thought, okay, this is kind of interesting. I'll look into this. Well, you have to have a library membership that partners with Canopy. Turns out my library does. Problem is, I've never signed up for my library as an adult, ever.
Richard, come on.
So I went to the library and got myself a library card. And then I went and I signed up for Canopy.
Wait, you had to go to the library to do this? You couldn't do it on the website?
I wanted to see what my actual local library was like.
You're like, what's a library look like on the inside?
I haven't been to our local library. I wanted to see it looked pretty much, I imagine, like what it looked like 40 years ago. I don't think they've changed at all. But they have computers now.
Right. They didn't have computers 40 years ago.
Yeah. So I went and I signed up for Canopy. Except that the OAuth that allows you to validate with your library card wasn't working with my library. So they just fixed that. And I have been able to get in and see what movies. They have a ton of movies. They have a ton of really good movies. So this is something that you should look into because it's free. You get 10 credits. It may be different for different libraries, but I get 10 credits a month. And a credit is a film viewing. And you have 3 days from the day you start it to view the film. Instructional videos are not included in that. So you could, you know, kind of learn some stuff and not end up counting toward those credits at all. There are documentaries, there are short films, there are a ton of Academy Award winner and nominee films. Like I said, a bunch of the Criterion films. And I'm kind of impressed. Now, what I don't know is, what are these going to look like on the television? They have apps for pretty much everything. So I loaded it on Apple TV. I loaded it on my tablet. But I have no idea what the video quality is going to be like. And one of the things I'm really disappointed by is they don't have trailers. So if there's a movie that you're interested in watching, you just kind of have to dive in because you have a description and the poster and play. So... Now, it does let you keep a watch list, so that's good. So you can kind of find things and add it to the list and then watch them later. Anyway, free video service through the library. Pretty cool. Check it out.
Yeah, I think I will.
Not all libraries do support it. I think the New York city libraries ended up canceling their partnership with Canopy last year or some time ago. But definitely check that out. And that's K-A-N-O-P-Y, because that's how you spell Canopy, right?
Yeah, service with partnering with a library should probably know how to spell their words.
Silly. All right. So I have been watching some regular TV like Big Brother and Extras and another episode of The Boys. I finished Tales of the City. I got back to Black Mirror and I almost finished season two of that because I had kind of stalled as I had just started season two. And then I started watching Josh's favorites, The Flash and Arrow, the two most recent seasons of those, because I never did watch those live this past season.
Because if you're looking for superhero shows, you should go to the CW.
Well, yeah, no. Obviously. And something Josh doesn't like at all, I got back to watching The Good Place season two.
That show's terrible. Why would you waste your time? Go back to the CW superhero shows.
Wow, season two is so creative.
Mm-hmm.
It is such a departure from the somewhat formulaic first season. I love it. I'm absolutely loving it.
Good.
And I'm halfway through the season already. So, yeah, what a ride. What a ride. And then I watched two more space movies. I watched The Last Man on the Moon, which is a documentary filmed with and about Gene Cernan before he passed away in 2017. And this movie, basically, he takes you through his experience of being on Apollo 17 and being on that last mission. So that's pretty cool. And then I also watched For All Mankind, which is a Criterion Collection movie, but not available to public library partners through Canopy, only available through college library. Anyway, whatever. Yeah. Licensing. Gotta love licensing.
Love it.
Anyway, $4.99 on iTunes. I rented it and I'm glad I rented it because it was weird. It was really weird. Maybe in its time, it was amazing because it's from 1989 or something like that. But it chronicles the 4 years that we were going back and forth to the moon and tells the story as if it's one mission by mishmashing all the video and stories together of all the different missions. So I found it very confusing.
Yeah.
Because they had, like, for example, they're talking in the command module on the way to the moon and Lovell is in the command module. And then 10, 15 minutes later, then Armstrong is getting off of, stepping on the moon. I'm like, wait. This is not how this worked. I don't understand. And then I read the description and I'm like, oh, okay. All right. But, you know, there are so many really good movies now. I would watch Apollo 11 instead. If you're trying to figure out which of these movies that you want to watch, watch Apollo 11. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
And then finally, because I have been all caught up on my podcasts.
What?
I know. I'm still all caught up on my podcasts.
Crazy.
I decided to start reading again. And by reading, of course, I mean Audible.
Right.
So I am now reading a book called Scrum, The Art of Doing Twice the Work in Half the Time, which is actually written by one of the guys who created Scrum.
Cool.
So I needed some credits to retain my Scrum certification, and this counts toward that. So I thought, hey, I'll give this a try. This is a book that a former colleague of mine had recommended, and I'm enjoying it.
Cool.
Yep. And that is it for me. So Josh, how about you and all the things that you've been doing in your entertainment center?
Which he's saying that because he knows the list is quite short. Although, I have a couple of things on my list that aren't on my list that I think I'm going to add. Because you were just talking about audiobooks. Richard, forget about Audible. Now that you have a library card, you can get audiobooks from the library.
True.
That's what I do. I don't pay $1 billion to Audible for Audible books. That service is a racket. That's really expensive.
Well, I have suspended my service because it took me years to figure that out.
Oh, yeah. $15 a month to get a book? No. No thanks. Instead, go to your library, get either the Hoopla app or the Libby app. They're both really good. And then just get audiobooks for free. I've been reading a couple also that aren't fiction or anything like that. One I loved, and this is all Jen's fault, and I think she's actually maybe kicking herself for recommending it to me, because it's a parenting book, and I'm like, you know, I think we should be doing things this way, and then like I do things that way, and then she feels guilty because she's not doing things that way. And yeah, it's a book called Unconditional Parenting, and it's like, if you've got kids or if you've got grandkids, It's a great book. Like it's a very different way of thinking about how to raise kids. It's good. The other book that I'm reading right now, which Jen and I are both reading at the same time and not on purpose. It's kind of weird. I was like, "Hey, are you reading this? Have you heard of this one?" And she's like, "Yeah, I'm reading it right now. It's called Better Than Before. It's by Gretchen Rubin, and this is one of the many books out there on habits and forming habits, and it's really good. Lots of different tips and, you know, ways to kind of figure out what kind of habit former you are and what types of things might actually work for you and things to avoid. It's good. So that one is called Better Than Before. So that's it for books. In terms of TV and games, not much. Games, basically, well, I'll get back to that. TV, Homeland, season 3, done. Finished it this weekend. So starting season 4, what are there, 7 seasons currently of Homeland? I'm really far behind.
Yes, there are, and I believe they just announced that 8 will be the last.
Oh, okay. I'm okay. Like, I'm okay with that because they're going to finish it. That's the right way to do it. So cool. Good for them. So finished up season 3. Hopefully, we'll be picking up season 4 this weekend or sometime throughout this week. And then I also finally upgraded my main computer, this computer that I'm podcasting on, to Windows 10 version 1903. So this is the spring update from this year. And if I'm being honest, the only reason I really did it, because there aren't that many new features that are all that exciting, you have to have this version of Windows 10 if you want to use Xbox Game Pass for PC. It's the only way it works, which is kind of annoying. But, you know, once I did that, I've got access to it. They don't make it super easy to find the games, though. They're in the store, obviously, but they don't just have, like, a section in the store, at least not that I found, for Game Pass games. This is real easy on the Xbox. It's not very easy on Windows. What I end up doing is opening up a web browser and going to the Game Pass website and viewing the list of games there. And then when you click the link, it opens it up in the store app. It's really dumb, but hopefully they'll be fixing that for whatever they're going to call this fall's release. 1909, probably. Yeah, it's not great, but the games work and that's fun. So checking out a couple of different games there. I played CrossCode for about a half hour last night. I was talking to Joe about it this morning. He's like, I think he was kind of surprised. Like, you're not going to like that game. Why are you playing CrossCode? And I think he's absolutely right. But it was free because of Game Pass and small. So it installed quickly. And that was my qualifications for finding a game to play last night. So it was cool, but I think Joe's right that I probably won't stick with it for long. So that's been my experience with 1903 and Game Pass on PC. GP3 in the chat says exactly the same thing, that it's totally not clear how this all works on PC, and they've got to make the store app better to make this work. So hopefully they will. The store app is a store app, so they can update it without having to wait for the next version of Windows. So hopefully they're going to fix this sooner rather than later, because there are a lot of really good games in Xbox Game Pass for PC. And just a quick reminder, if you have a PC, a gaming PC, and an Xbox, then you should absolutely be thinking about Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, where you get Game Pass on Xbox and on PC, because, man, you just never run out of games that way. So it's a great service. So that's it. That's it for what's going on in My Entertainment Center and for all of our news. And so that's it for the show. If you want to get a hold of us, every way that you can possibly get a hold of us is listed in our show notes over at thedigitalmediazone.com. But you can also find us on Twitter. Richard's handle is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone. We're also on Instagram and Facebook. All those links, again, in the show notes. Richard's also got another show that he works on, another podcast called Home On, where he takes a look at the latest news from the smart home world from a DIY perspective. It's like this show, but for smart home. Richard, what's the latest with Home On?
Yeah, our new episode with Leo Dess from Allegion, talking about Schlage and Schlage locks, should be out by the time you're hearing this. So expect that this week. And I think we had a really good discussion, so I'm looking forward to that. And I know who I'm trying to get on the next episode, but I don't have a commitment yet, so I can't talk about it. But I'm really excited if it's who I think it's
going to be. Do you want to just call that person out on this show and like force him into coming on?
No, because they don't listen to the show.
Now I'm hurt, Richard. I got to hurt me at the end of the show. Anyway, you can also, if you want to see me hurting in real time, we do the show live Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. There's a video, audio, and a chat room for you to fully participate in the show like GP3 just did. So look for the tweets to know for sure when we're going to be going live so that you can join us, because that's going to do it for episode 493. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.
Welcome to episode 493 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. Man, I mess up the numbers and I can't even say it. Let me say that again.